The next case this morning is number 033321, Ruth McCombs against Joanne B. Barnett.
Good morning.
Mr. Daly.
Good morning, Your Honor. Frederick Daly on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Ruth McCombs. This court has repeatedly held in numerous decisions that a hypothetical must include all limitations supported by the medical evidence. In this case, the administrative law judge asked the hypothetical at a hearing and then after the hearing referred the plaintiff out to a psychologist for a consultative examination. The psychologist submitted a report and a mental residual functional capacity assessment. That was the only psychological report in the record, only MRC assessment in the record. The administrative law judge, instead of asking for a supplemental hearing or having a supplemental interrogatory sent to the vocational expert with the amended findings that were mentioned in the mental residual functional capacity assessment form, instead seemed to have incorporated these findings into his decision as if he was accepting this only uncontradicted report from his own expert, yet not allowing for many of the findings to be even mentioned in his decision. For instance, he interestingly mentioned from Dr. Walter's report that in his decision on page 4, that the doctor noted there was a fair ability to engage in the mental work-related functions such as maintaining a schedule, using judgment, understanding and remembering, and executing even complex instructions. However, he makes no mention of the many factors in the MRFC that supported the plaintiff. For instance, Dr. Walters included that there would be a poor ability of the plaintiffs to perform at a constant pace without an unreasonable number and length of rest periods. The doctor also opined that the plaintiffs would sustain an ordinary routine, could not sustain an ordinary routine without special supervision, was also rated as poor. Also poor, but with a little
error. The government says those findings were taken into account by the ALJ's prescription that the work had to be unskilled, routine, and there was very little concentration involved, and so forth.
Well, I think the government went beyond that. The government was giving reasons for the ALJ that the ALJ never gave himself. What the government said was that these opinions were not considered by the ALJ and not factored into a hypothetical post-hearing to a vocational expert because they claim that the psychologist went outside of her expertise by considering the physical pain that the plaintiff suffers. Response to that is twofold. First of all, if you look at in the record at page 350, the psychologist actually said, and given the reasons, concentration, attention span negatively affected by chronic pain based on mental status evaluation. Secondly, most importantly, this is a pain disorder case. The ALJ accepted that it's a pain disorder case. The psychologist diagnosed pain disorder. Pain disorder takes into consideration both physical and mental. That's the psychologist's job. This is a consultative examiner hired by the Social Security Administration, trained by the Social Security Administration, that used all of the guidelines set out in the DSM, made a diagnosis of pain disorder, and completed a mental RFC. This court held in the Johansson case that when a consultative examiner submitted the only mental RFC in the record, that it was proper for the ALJ to follow it. Here, the ALJ not only didn't follow it, he doesn't even mention in his decision why it is that he did not include it. The only explanations we have are explanations by the government post hoc made for the first time at the court level. The administrative law judge also included in his decision that the plaintiff would have difficulty performing work, or that any work that he had would have to not involve interaction with supervisors, coworkers, or the general public. That's an actual finding by the ALJ, yet that part of the finding was never factored into the hypothetical to the vocational expert.
Well, I thought you were also arguing that that part of the finding is inconsistent with the assumption that she needs close supervision. Either she's getting closely supervised by somebody or she's working on her own, right?
That's correct. That's also part of our argument, that is inconsistent, that we don't know where the ALJ came up with this. There's no evidence to support it. Part of our argument is that if he's going to make this part of his finding, he has to include it in his hypothetical. However, the evidence really supports that the plaintiff doesn't have this difficulty with getting along with people or coworkers, but she would need special supervision. And if you need special supervision from your supervisor, then obviously you have to be involved in a lot of interaction as opposed to no interaction with your supervisor.
Well, it's the problem that the limitations that the ALJ incorporated into this hypothetical don't include what I'm going to crudely call the sort of interruptions that the pain that she experiences would cause, either in her concentration or in her ability to carry out these tasks.
Yes, that appears to be what the psychologist is saying, that the plaintiff can understand things. It's not an intellectual problem, but the pain causes irritability, and the pain significantly interferes with the ability to complete a task, and that's why the psychologist had rated as poor. Well, poor with a little arrow going towards fear, maintaining attention and concentration and dealing with work stresses. And that's then indicated that this individual would need special supervision. And these are factors that that have to be considered. I mean, this court held in Zarowski, the ALJ not only would have to mention these factors in his decision so that you know that he noticed them, but he needs to examine them. There has to be an analysis of them. Instead, he just ignores it. He ignores all the evidence that's favorable to the plaintiff and instead just points out a few bits of information that he feels supports the hypothetical that he gave to the vocational expert and supports the his ultimate decision. So that concludes my argument. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daly. We'll hear now from Mr. Sale.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Karen Sayon, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this matter. I respectfully ask that this Court affirm the District Court's judgment because the Administrative Law Judge's finding that Ms. McCombs was not disabled was supported by substantial evidence. In this case, after considering the evidence, the Administrative Law Judge reasonably concluded that Ms. McCombs retained the ability to perform a range of unskilled routine sedentary work that allowed her to alternate between sitting and standing, and that did not involve close interaction with supervisors, coworkers, or the general public. And indeed, this finding was supported by substantial evidence. First of all, there were several opinions from medical doctors, and indeed, Ms. McCombs is not contesting that she had any greater limitations due to the physical findings. Rather, she's focusing on her pain complaints.
But isn't that the whole point? I mean, nobody's arguing about the underlying medical condition. She obviously does have some underlying problems that show up on objective evidence like MRIs or x-rays or what have you. It's the pain disorder, and the ALJ really doesn't say much about Dr. Walter's report, aside from this one sentence that you quoted, which shows up on page 4 of the ALJ's opinion. And it did seem to me that there was some potentially, at least, contradictory conclusions. There were some potentially contradictory conclusions in the ALJ's report.
But I believe, first of all, the Administrative Law Judge, he discussed, first of all, Dr. Walter's actual examination on page 25 of the transcript.
He didn't say much about it, did he?
Right. He mentioned the fact that the examination revealed essentially normal mental functioning. That examination showed that...
But what does that mean, though? I mean, somebody can have normal mental functioning, but if they've just broken their leg, you know, maybe they're in a lot of pain and they're not thinking clearly right at that moment. Now, she didn't just break her leg, but she has a pain disorder that causes her to experience more pain than we might predict from the underlying physical phenomena. And the psychologist recognized this as something that they like to label a pain disorder.
Exactly.
And he doesn't challenge that she has the pain disorder. The claimant's most limiting impairment is the pain disorder with psychological overlay. So, yes, she can think, but how can she translate that into activity?
Exactly. The question then becomes, how limiting is that pain disorder? And here the administrative law judge had to make that finding, and he based it on Dr. Walters' report.
But he rejects what Dr. Walters said and doesn't tell us why.
Dr. Walters, in her assessment, concluded that Ms. McCombs had a good or fair ability in 13 out of 17 areas that she assessed. In the other areas where she determined there was a greater limitation, she gave us a handwritten explanation for why she came to those conclusions. First of all, she said that due to Ms. McCombs' degenerative disc disease, she was going to have problems sitting, standing, or walking for any length of time.
Right. See, there's where I think Mr. Daly has a point. You, as an experienced lawyer in this area, can guess that maybe the ALJ was concerned about what the psychologist was doing. The ALJ never says, I decided to reject the assessment of a poor ability in those areas because Dr. Walters wasn't entitled to rely on the same expert findings about her back that I'm relying on. It's not that Dr. Walters is saying anything different about her back than any of this myriad of other
Correct.
Doctors said. So in that sense, hard to see why you criticize it. If she came up with some completely out-of-the-blue diagnosis, that would be a reason to be quite skeptical. But she didn't. She rehearses the same things the ALJ is looking at.
But the administrative law judge also expressed the concern that Dr. Walters indicated that due to the pain complaints, Ms. McCombs was going to have difficulty sitting, standing, or walking for any length of time. His residual functional capacity took that concern into account by limiting her to the range of sedentary work that's less demanding and that allows her to alternate positions anytime she feels like it. He took that concern from Dr. Walters and incorporated it into his residual functional capacity finding. In addition, Dr. Walters also...
Is that good enough? Shouldn't he address the... There's only one psychological evaluation, and there's a lot of these other doctors said, well, there's a psychiatric overlay and so on. There's certainly a strong indication that there's a lot of psychological problems here, and there's only one psychologist. Shouldn't he have spent a little more time on the psychologist and said what he believed and what he didn't believe related to what the applicant said here?
I think it's important here in this case, Judge, to look at the entire record, including the transcript of the administrative hearing. At that hearing, Ms. McCombs' attorney repeatedly stated that her condition had, in fact, worsened. There was only one, at that time, examination from a psychologist who showed essentially normal functioning. The administrative law judge had a decision to make. Ms. McCombs, who was represented by an attorney, hadn't presented evidence of her established disability. So what did the ALJ do? He sent her into not one, but another consultative examination to determine the extent of her limitations. The administrative law judge then, in fact, didn't ignore this report. Well, of course, he could have discussed it more thoroughly. The question is whether he was required to do so. Here he talked about Dr. Walter's report. He also talked about the other consultative examiner that he sent Ms. McCombs to, and he also talked about the limitations that Dr. Walters concluded Ms. McCombs had.
He didn't ever say he didn't believe her testimony, did he, the applicant?
He found that her limitations were not entirely credible, Your Honor.
What?
But how is he making a psychological assessment when the only expert psychological testimony is, I mean, that's the nature of a psychological disorder, right? I mean, it's in your head. It's not in your back or anywhere else. It seems to me when he says that, he's in a sense second-guessing what she's saying about her pain with no particular reason, and indeed reasons to the contrary in the form of Dr. Walters' report in the record.
I think to the contrary, Your Honor. Dr. Walters, in fact, in her examination of Ms. Combs, concluded that she had a global assessment of functioning score of 60, which is consistent with only moderate symptoms. In addition, as I explained on her assessment, she rated her as having a good or fair ability in 13 out of
But they may not be the 13 that can. I mean, what about, you want to focus on the half full part of this glass or the two thirds full or whatever it is. But she finds poor capacity in the rest of these areas, or poor, you know, leading over to good. Where is that confronted, either in the hypothetical or in the ALJ's opinion?
Well, the administrative law judge took this into account and limited her to a range of unskilled, simple tasks in his residual functional capacity.
How do we know that's a responsive limitation to these problems? You know, he could have limited her, you know, to many things that might not have linked up properly. Why were those limitations the ones that were the right way to reflect these medical findings?
For example, on the second page of her assessment, Dr. Walters expressed concern that Ms. McCombs would have difficulty performing more complex tasks or more detailed tasks. And as a result of that, she concluded that while Ms. McCombs had difficulty in that area, she had a good or unlimited ability to perform unskilled job functions, and that's what the administrative law judge in this case limited her to. In addition, Dr. Walters expressed concern that Ms. McCombs might have difficulty in her attention or concentration. The question then becomes, was the administrative law judge's analysis of this case supported by substantial evidence?
Yeah, let's focus on the concentration. Suppose because she gets waves of pain, you know, she has to take 15-minute breaks randomly. Most employers wouldn't tolerate that. That's way too long. They need, especially in these unskilled jobs, predictability. Where is that reflected in the administrative law judge's analysis?
Well, Dr. Walters gave her explanation for why she had concerns about Ms. McComb's limitations to in attention and concentration, and she explained it was based on the mental status examination. While the judge could have concluded she had greater limitations, he, in fact, looked at that mental status examination, which, as he said in his decision specifically, that examination showed she had essentially normal mental functioning.
But you're not answering my question. I mean, you know, you're thinking mental functioning equals no pain, and I'm thinking that pain and mental functioning are two different factors that might interact in certain ways. Well, I mean, brilliant people can experience pain. Why is mental functioning the same thing as pain?
Because that examination showed that she had the ability at least to concentrate to perform simple tasks. She was
when she was in pain or when she wasn't in pain?
She testified she was in pain almost all the time. That's what she told her doctors. So at that examination, I believe Dr. Walters stated that Ms. McCombs was having difficulty walking, that kind of thing, complaining of pain. Yet despite that, during the examination, she was able to recall several digits, recall two or three items.
Sevens and stuff, yeah, right.
Exactly. I see my time is up.
Thank you, Ms. Sam.
Thank you.
Mr. Daly, you have 2 minutes.
As an individual is limited to unskilled work, the vocational experts will state that, and the courts have held that unskilled work is structured work. I mean, you don't have the opportunity to leave the workstation or stop your task. You have to remain on task and you take scheduled breaks. The situation here is not whether this plaintiff could understand how to do a job. It's whether she could perform it at a sustained and competitive rate, which is necessary in unskilled work. The government seems to indicate that there's not very many ratings that support, and they're taking this numbers game of, it was 11 out of 20, so that means that she has nine categories that are good, so it's some kind of balancing scale, so therefore she can perform unskilled work. But 11 out of 20, either fair ratings or poor ratings, is very significant. I mean, fair only means that you have an ability to function in the area, but it is limited but satisfactory. As you start adding these on, and between fair and poor, you have 11 out of 20. You have to present that to a vocational expert at a hearing to have a fair hearing. It's not up to an administrative law judge to simply use a euphemism and say, okay, this individual is limited to simple 1-2-step low concentration work. Give me jobs. You're going to get unskilled jobs because that's the definition of unskilled. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daly. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel.